Future-proof extra from News Talk.
When we're dealing with a crisis, we tend to naturally turn to certain people to lead. This goes for all sorts of extreme situations, from warfare, financial crashes, to the spread of deadly diseases. We tend to gravitate towards quick, decisive thinking. But what if we were in the middle of a crisis, say, a zombie apocalypse? Just what kind of leadership might be needed then? Well, Marcus Holgren is Professor of Organization and Leadership from the Umel School of Business and Economics and Statistics. He joins us now. You don't know this, Marcus, but the George A. Romero series of zombie films are some of my favorite pieces of cinema.
then we are two.
Yeah. So tell me first about what you teach and what you study before we get into zombie apocalypses and how these films are useful.
So I'm leading a research group called Extreme Environments, Everyday Decisions, EDD, where we focus on leadership and group dynamics in what we call extreme contexts. And extreme contexts are settings where people might get hurt and killed, which zombie apocalypse certainly qualifies as. But we've studied, for example, organizational routines on Mount Everest. So we followed two expeditions to Everest. I had a research assistant going up to 8,000 meters. We also done a lot of research with the Swedish police, different emergency departments at hospitals, and zombie movies, for example.
Some people would not call those situations extreme, though, right? If you're a highly trained military expert, you may be used to close hand-to-hand and gunfighting. What we might describe as extreme is probably very different to what they might describe.
That's perfectly right. Yes, I totally agree. So this is also why we spend a lot of time looking into different types of crises and extreme contexts, because we tend to look at crisis as a crisis is a crisis is a crisis. But at the end, we actually end up comparing apples to pears. So, for example, a financial crisis are definitely something different compared to a shooting. And if we are trained to be shot at as a police or a military or someone like that, they are certainly going to behave differently compared to if average you and me or someone else getting shot at. And therefore, we argue then we also need to consider what makes the context particular and how does that influence our behaviors as humans, as organizations, when we are trying to understand the response that we have to what's going on.
Obviously, there are some physiological responses that people have in times of great crisis. If you're in the middle of a school shooting, for example, adrenaline will be pumping. You'll have a fight or flight sort of response. But decision making, the stuff that you're interested in, is beyond that initial shock that the event is happening? Or do you also factor in the state of mind of people in high stress needing to make decisions immediately after something really violent?
We're a little bit all over the place. So it depends on the particular research project. So if we go back to the research that we've been doing before. So for example, we've looked into Everest 96, where 11 people died, and kind of what caused that event. And another event that we've looked at is K2 in 2008, where 9 people out of 27 died within 36 hours or something like that. And of course, then you have a lot of the kind of immediate response and the reasonings and so on going into that. But we've also then looked at Mount Everest expeditions where we focus more on the everyday practice. So for example, on boredom and emotions like that, or the emergency department on different organizational routines and coordination and so on. So it kind of depends on where you want to where you want to focus.
When we think about these situations, most of us, I suppose, have only really read about them in the news or observed them through through the media as entertainment or documentary. I'm wondering, what sort of a leader do you want in that scenario? I love the fact that George A. Romero's work always puts forward a strong, decisive person at the front who you think is going to be your leader and often ends out to be the worst possible thing in that situation. Is that does that bear out in real life?
Yeah. So in a crisis situation or in a zombie doomsday scenario, first of all, we need to recognize that training makes life a little bit easier, for sure. So take, for example, military special operations. I mean, they are good at what they are doing because they are training extensively. But also from the research that what we find from the research is that, first of all, we can't look at leadership as a single leader. We need to consider leadership as changing patterns over time, where we need different capabilities, different ways of reasoning, different ways of being, depending on the situation. Second of all, it's also what is effective is up for debate. I mean, in a crisis situation where, for example, we in a school shooting, I mean, of course, effective is a matter of survival. Or in a doomsday scenario, it's a matter of survival. But in a financial crisis, for example, then what's effective is something different. But coming back to the original question then, a desired leadership in a crisis situation, it's about relying on shared visions and goals, because this creates the possibility of different people taking on the role as a leader at different points in time, and they can kind of transition smoothly, and their best capabilities come in use at the right time.
But obviously, yeah. in an emergency situation, people tend to look to one person. They don't tend to divvy out these specialty roles and say, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Can you show me evidence of any scenario where it was actually group leadership that came out with the best result?
In a real crisis situation, a whole team approach, if I'm well, where everyone is feeding in and we're discussing the solution and so on, it might be quite ineffective because it takes too long if we need to react to a situation that we have at hand. So, for example, if someone is shooting at us, of course, we're not going to stand there debating who's going to do what and so on. So in those situations, we need to have directive, assertive leadership, of course. But what we also need to recognize, so for example, in the zombie apocalypse, where it's a matter of sustained existential threat, it's a lot of the events that's part of a long process. And because it's part of a long process, then also the leadership have the space to change over time.
Yeah.
And also, one of the things that we need also to consider is so that we tend, as you say, we tend to look to a single individual in times of crisis, or we tend to attribute values to the single hero of good deeds. So this is, for example, why we attribute so much to leaders such as Jeanne d'Arc, Steve Jobs, Martin Luther King, JFK. Hmm. Or we attribute horrible events to, for example, Hitler, Stalin, or contemporary politicians, to be a little bit polite. but we have to realize that leadership, it's not about the lone individual. It is about how we relate to each other and how those relations between each other, how they create patterns of leadership, how it changes and develops over time according to the context.
Okay, tell me a little bit about the science, because you actually watched George A. Romero movie. So for people who are not familiar, it's a very cult iconic movie director who made a spate of classic zombie movies. He sort of invented and continued the genre of zombie films. Everything from Dawn of the Dead to Day of the Dead, and lots of other of the deads in between. Why pick George A. Romero, and what could you learn from a zombie film?
Yeah. So coming back then to the discussion about different types of crisis and so on, we know fairly well about how teams, how individuals, how groups, how organizations, and how society deals with events that we have experienced or are trained for in one way or the other. But what we do not know very well is situations which takes us by total surprise that we have never experienced and that we have no training for. So that's a huge lacuna, if one will. And the idea behind using the zombie movies, the zombie genre, is that we wanted to look into this empty space and see what could it tell us about human behavior under sustained existential threat. And of course then, sustained existential threat, that's associated with different doomsday scenarios. And what's more doomsday than a zombie apocalypse where it's a matter of a couple of thousand people surviving, or and the entire society is just brought to pieces. And we started this research by considering a bunch of different zombie movies and discussing, okay, what does this teach us, and what kind of, is it on a sufficient level of detail, if one will, to be sensible for research? And what we came to realize is that George Romero's movies, I mean, they are a huge critique against societies to start with. So for example, commercialism and racism and so on. And also the Day of the Dead, it's really, really evident how a problematic leadership, what it leads to, and the consequences it has for the organization and for the groups and for the individuals. So that's why we chose Day of the Dead, because the leadership challenges are so prominent in them.
In this film, for those who haven't seen it, there's basically a helicopter crew, scientists, and the military, and then some random people, and they all sort of, there's a bit of a power struggle and a decision matrix as to what people need to do. And there's constant sort of pushes in one way or the other for control of resources, for control of safe houses and so on and so forth. And it's a really interesting sort of study on human relationships. And while people might think, listening to this, why would a scientist or a psychologist look at this as a mirror for real life? One of the things we have to say is the sort of behavior that we saw and see in these movies, we very much have seen in the last 6 months when we look out the window in the wake of the COVID pandemic. I mean, this is probably an amazing time for you to be looking at this, Marcus, because you get a really good idea of actually how people behave in a long-term sort of extended crisis.
Yeah, you're perfectly right. We've written two papers about zombie apocalypses, one on Day of the Dead and the other one on The Walking Dead. And actually, as we were finalizing The Walking Dead paper, where we're looking at conflicts between groups and within groups, the COVID situation struck. And we couldn't help but reflect that actually what we've written about, that's what's unfolding in front of our eyes. And the situation is, of course, it's extremely problematic, and people are dying and so on. And it's horrible in so many different ways. But society is still functioning on a certain level. The agencies are there. We have a legal system. The police are there and so on. But still, and compare them to the zombie apocalypse when nothing is working, essentially. And still, even if the COVID situation is lesser than the zombie situation, we still see behaviors where people are fighting over toilet paper. We or we, that's the wrong word, but we see people spitting at the police. I've actually studied the police during the COVID situation and their handling of the situation. And the major problem is, at least initially, how people were spitting at the police as a way of doing violence towards them.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just, when I think about it, that's just one of a number of sort of panic behaviors that we've seen, or one or two, but we think about Trump wanting to take control of the vaccine. Yeah. I mean, like, it really is, it shows in maybe mild and maybe not that mild a way, it really shows how we would behave if resources become really, really scarce. If zombies were to take over, it would be ugly, right?
It would indeed. I mean, we would turn on each other. We would kill each other because, you know, all the factories would go down, the systems would go down. If I don't get the medicine, my son might die. But you want your medicine for your kids. And yeah well, how are we going to settle that situation then?
I could actually talk about this all day, but I know I'm conscious of the time. Let's talk a little bit more about the science. So what did you learn from studying these films, and how do you think it might be useful to us to understand leadership in crisis?
So what we learned was that a desired leadership pattern, a leadership configuration, if one will, has to rely on shared visions and goals. And we learned that directive and aggressive leadership may be directly damaging. But so made a kind of whole team approach where you just stand there debating for too long. We don't have that time. But in order to be successful in terms of survival, we need to recognize the need of a leadership mix of leadership styles. It can't always be directive and authoritative. Sometimes it has to be, and it can't always be engaging. But leadership must be directive and assertive, but at the same time very caring and engaging. We need to care for each other.
Stuff you're talking about there sort of reminds me of the personality test I took when I was doing a program about surgery in the Royal College of Surgeons here, and empathy and an ability to listen to others was a really key point. And actually analyzing, as you've done, disasters in the past has led to a change in approach of this, you know, the consultant being top down telling the team what to do. This leads to more errors, the pilot not listening to the co-pilot or other supporting crew when it came to life or death decisions. This dictatorship model that was the basis of military, aviation, health and many other industries, it's going to end in more trouble. And I suppose the ultimate of that is Chernobyl, which, if you've seen the series, is a great exposition of what actually happens when someone with a strong personality doesn't listen to subordinates, and the entire world in a way suffered as a result of these leadership personality problems.
Exactly. And you also had the Tenerife air disaster. I think it was in the 80s, where two big full passenger planes crashed into each other because the co-pilot didn't dare to speak up to his senior, the main pilot. So there's plenty of those examples. Another thing that we learned, and that I perhaps think we should get into, it's that using fiction in order to kind of get new ideas, fresh ideas, new approaches to things are extremely valuable to any organization. I mean, I've been talking to the Swedish police about this for ages, and they are so extremely interested. We are about to run a couple of workshops with them based on zombie movies and leadership and group dynamics there, because they see this is actually helping them to understand leadership and what's going on, not necessarily in the zombie apocalypse, but in their current struggles.
And I think while the acting was certainly quite cheesy in the Romero films, he certainly did have a good understanding of human interactions and group dynamics. I want to finish, Marcus, by asking you about some advice. If we do find ourselves in a sustained life or death situation that goes on not just for a second or two, but for a few hours. Should we be trusting? Should we try and take control? What should we do if we're in a group where we need to come to a decision for the best of the group and we need to do it quickly?
Someone needs to take control in those situations, of course, but at the same time also make sure that we acknowledge other people's opinions, and in order to rely on the best information that we have about the situation. And if you are not doing that, we might end up in a really problematic situation because of conflicts, because we don't share the vision and goals that we have besides survival. Also, information is one thing that's extremely important. So we need to inform each other, kind of the ones closest to the crisis need to inform others that are a little bit more distant and perhaps have an overview of the situation, and vice versa. And also recognize that if we have an organization, the higher up in the organization we come, the more diluted the information become. So therefore, we also need to push the responsibility of handling a crisis further down into the organization, because they are typically most qualified to take care of it, at least of the immediate threat.
Well, Marcus Hallgren, Professor of Organization and Leadership at Umeå University in Sweden, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.